So we start Canto 4, which is actually the beginnings of the play of the life energy manifesting itself, breaking out of the inertia and tamas of matter. So it is not a life that is of a very noble and sublime character. It is the first starting point. But I think in every starting point, which is a journey, the end is already there in view. When we start a journey, we are moving towards a goal. So life is moving towards a goal. Every road has an end. This is the first step. The first steps are preliminary steps. These steps are not very sure, not very clear. So the life force that begins and will end up in the ultimate manifestation of the truth, that's why it begins, you begin to end. That beginning is a very daring thing.
Can I ask him a question there? First he is explaining the glory of life, the life.
That is life in general. Then, now it is the beginning of life manifestation in the world of evolution. And the first stages are, like all stages of growth, preliminary stages. So we don't expect splendor and grandeur right away. Though it is a daughter of delight, life, but it is not that. It is something that is daring, I would call it daring, to break the mold of the pressure of inertia, matter, to break out the first even elements of life, like amoeba and bacteria. We don't know what amount of conscious energy must be trapped within them. Why do they have to come out? Slowly they will grow. That is also us. We are not all that different sometimes from the amoeba. We are very mean, very small. But that is the starting point of a greater journey. And that is the beautiful thing. That's why the whole of Savitri. Man is a journey. Man is a traveler. He's making a journey. It's a journey of consciousness. It starts small. It has to end on the top. That's why he also himself has written, as he's climbing, he says, I have made Savitri a means of ascension. As he climbs different layers, different levels of consciousness, each step is a different level of consciousness. It's as if the landscape of reality becomes vaster, wider, fuller, all more and more, all embracing. And that is the beautiful thing. So we are, as I said, you just said, I said it because she said she was sad. We were talking of how fortunate we were because we saw Sri Aurobindo, we saw Mother, and she did not. But she has started the journey, and the journey begins to reach a goal. A quivering, trepidant, uncertain world, born from that dolorous meeting and eclipse, appeared in the emptiness where her feet had trod. Dolorous meeting of the force of light and the, you might say, resistance of darkness, of ignorance, of unconsciousness. So there is a struggle, there will be pain. It's not a natural, spontaneous, you might say, emergence. That's why he calls it trepidant, trembling, something that is not strong, not firm yet. Appeared in the emptiness where her feet had trod. The emptiness because it is empty of consciousness before that. a quick obscurity, a seeking stir. You may not know, but the original meaning of quick is living. It's the opposite of dead. The quick and the dead. That which is alive is quick. It's not fast. So he is using it in that sense. It's the living obscurity. It's almost a play of opposites. Dark, heavy resistance, which is alive with its opposite elements, which is breaking out. And this is us. Actually, it is us. We are dull, heavy, inert, and we are also the recipients of energy that wants to break out of the dullness. Otherwise, we would not be alive. A quick obscurity, a seeking stir. What is this movement, this journey of a force that is emerging? Seeking for what? We don't know yet. The consciousness is very, very limited. But it's not satisfied with being what it is. Like we are sometimes. We are moving. We are alive. What are we alive for? What are we looking for? We don't know. But we know that we don't want to stay this way anymore. You know what you don't want before you know what you want. That I can't be like this any longer. So this consciousness wants to break out. It doesn't know in which direction it is going to proceed, but it can't remain the way it was. A seeking stir. There was a writhing of half-conscious force. So you have this sense of something that is at war with itself, a struggle, something that resists, something that refuses to accept resistance. There was a writhing of half-conscious force, hardly awakened from the inconscient sleep. Because life is force. And sleep is inertia. So breaking of inertia. Just like when, even in our daily life, when you wake up sometimes, there are people when they wake up in the morning, I suppose they don't jump out of bed. They don't want to wake up. The body doesn't want to move, but the body has woken up. It is aware that it doesn't want to move. There is a certain beginning of, now I have to get up, I have to move, I have to stand up. But a little more, let me stay, rest a little longer. So the two things are always there within us. Hardly awakened from the inconscient sleep, tied to an instinct-driven ignorance. So what is instinct? This force is an expression of instinct. What is instinct? Is it not some form of a power, direct descent of energy? It's a kind of a plunging of a divine consciousness that has got lost in the darkness, apparently lost. So it is a kind of an intuitive knowledge. Automatically we know, without knowing with the brain or the head or the thought, automatically you know, like the body knows, it has to get up. There are many things we do without realizing that they are expressions of knowledge. But it's a direct knowledge. So it is a descent of a consciousness. Instinct is a descent from a higher plane, which has plunged into the darkness so that it seems darkened and it seems automatic. I don't think I should do this. The body doesn't think that the heart, its heart has to beat. The heart beats. The heart knows it has to beat because life has to continue. Why must life continue? What are we alive for? That we shall look into later, as the body says, we are here, we have a body, the body has to be alive, and then what shall we do with this living body? Perhaps we will think it over later, but for the present, the body has to be active, it has to live. So the heart has to beat, the blood has to flow. These are involuntary activities of the body. But it is an instinctive activity. It is not worked out by choice. We have voluntary activities which we do by choice, which are involuntary activities which are always free from error, if they are well done. If your heart is in a good condition, it knows exactly how to beat, at which rhythm, and so on, isn't it? It has not told you should beat like this. The blood is not told you should flow like this. There is therefore a direct knowledge. Instinct is an expression of a direct knowledge from some other world, but it has plunged into the darkness. The origin of that knowledge seems hidden, lost in the darkness. So it is tied to an instinct-driven ignorance, to find itself and find its hold on things. This struggle has to understand why we have to struggle. At some point, we have to recognize why we have to live. And with this life, which is an energy, what can we do with this life? You have energy, you have a body, it has power, but what are you going to do with this power? You can break all, you can make all. This is the problem of power, or all energy. Energy can shape, energy can break. But it is energy. It is not yet something that is guided by some higher consciousness. It is just an energy. Inheritor of poverty and loss. Poverty of consciousness. That is the thing. It has very little consciousness. Assailed by memories that fled when seized. But it wants to continue. Why? That is, it's the detail. Life does not want to stop. Even now, when there is a kind of a play of energy and the mind will say, your energy is decreasing, a time will soon come when it will be over, your physical energy will be exhausted and you will die. That is something that is the cause of some kind of, somewhere in the being, you said, it's not right. Death is not something that I can accept without revolt. Death raises a sense of shock, of pain. We have been dying for a very long time. And whenever there is death, there is pain. A kind of a complaint. Why is there death? So there is somewhere a knowledge that we are not born for death. Memory from beyond, because we have come from the eternal. And so when in the world of time we enter into a field of limitation and there is birth and there is death, somewhere there is this feeling. It's always, wherever there is death, there is pain, there is this grief, there is refusal. Because deep within, we are not meant for that. We are not meant to die. We are meant to be. The life force is to be. It is not to stop. And yet we die. Somewhere, there is therefore our own enemy is inside us. There is that force that makes us proceed, There is something in us that refuses to proceed. So our existence is like a battlefield. Inheritor of poverty and loss, assailed by memories of the origin. But we don't really remember it. We try to say, where do I come from? Often there are those who ask, where have I come from? Children ask, have I come from this world? Sometimes remember, maybe I came from another world. But all that is not necessarily true. There is the sense of, I like to believe my origin is divine. I like to believe that I have come even here, now, without really knowing and experiencing it, that my origin is the divine. Because my life force does not know what is the divine. But it does not like to accept that I am the child of darkness. I am the child of inertia. Haunted by a forgotten uplifting hope, it strove with the blindness as of groping hands to fill the aching and disastrous gap between earth's pain and the bliss from which life fell. This is the gap. We have fallen from the heights. We have risen from below. Fallen down here in the world of manifestation. All originates in the heights. Every force is a projection of the original truth, of the Sun, of the Supreme. So we are like a projection of that light. And yet, that like the sun's ray that has its origin in the Supreme Truth hits the ground and it enters the ground and is lost in the darkness. That is also what we are. So the whole story of man or the consciousness of man is a being who has forgotten himself. He doesn't know where he came from, why he is, what was his origin. Sometimes some faint, you might say, memories, and that's the important thing, some remembrances of the past are there. If I'm in touch with my soul, if even for a little while I am in touch with that in me which is eternal, sometimes I can connect with that origin. There are some who do. But it is very often short-lived. Unless one lives consciously in the soul. That is one thing we can't forget. That is where the life force comes from. The life force comes from the divine. And if we live in the divine consciousness, we don't lose contact with that truth. But we have usually cut ourselves off from that because the ego has stepped forward. The ego is a formation. The ego has made its own, you might say, structure on the surface of our consciousness and says, this is you. Where was the origin? So far back in the eternal. But if you have that connection, you can re-establish the connection. That is perhaps why in the ancient cultures and civilizations, in the Vedic age for instance, so much emphasis was laid on memory. Somewhere you have to go back, not the mind, because memory is a sense of connection. A continuity. Go back to where you came from. And that conscious connection, if we can establish again, then you can pursue your forward journey because you know the origin. But if I don't know where I came from, how can I say where I am going? We are halfway, we don't know ourselves, we don't know what we are for, we don't know where we are heading, if we are heading anywhere. So it's often a kind of a cycle, a repetitive circuit. We keep on rising to fall, living to die, making the same pattern over and over again. But life is an opportunity for reconnecting ourselves. But that, for that, this, you might say, faculty of that soul's memory, Sri Aurobindo calls it the soul's memory. Deep inside something knows. But I have to go deep within, and I must not cheat myself, because that tendency is also there. I like to believe the best of myself. Yes, I remember. I remember, I say. I have to be extremely pure, extremely sincere, extremely truthful to say, no, I don't remember. I believe I am the child of the mother. I am a projection of her force. But am I really consciously a manifestation of her force, even today as I am, in every aspect of my being? Or is there a disconnect? So in my head I say, yes, I love her, she's beautiful, she's my mother. But in my existence, in the life force that is flowing through my body, is it there or is it not there? And if I'm truthful, I will say, no, I don't have it. And that is the beginning of yoga. Yoga means union. And that is the subtitle of the book, The Synthesis of Yoga. All life is yoga. All that we do is an opportunity to re-establish that link, that connection, to prolong that sense of unity that is there. All is created by the One. It has built this many, this world of multiplicity, of diversity. It moves in all directions, but it is One. A world that ever seeks for something missed, hunts for the joy that earth has failed to keep. That is the thing. We were given joy. Is all is created by the Supreme Satchidananda. That is the creative energy, the energy of delight. And all is an expression of that Ananda. But as we experience the world, it is not Ananda. It is the opposite. There is struggle, there is pain, there is agony. So it's looking for that. That is why we don't... What we have lost, we want it. We have lost the sense of eternity, that's why we don't want to die. We want eternity. We want perfection. We want freedom, because we are bound, we are trapped. So it always looks for that which it had. That's why we're looking for it, that which has lost. So I say something has gone wrong somewhere. I was not like this at the origin, and now I have lost my connection with the source from which I fell. This is perhaps at the origin of the idea that paradise lost. Man has lost his... He has fallen. We are like fallen angels. Somewhere Sri Aurobindo mentions this also. A world that ever seeks for something missed, hunts for the joy that earth has failed to keep. Too near to our gates, it's unappeased unrest. Too near to our physical embodiment, where there is so much impurity, inertia, darkness, ignorance. Ignorance is the whole, you might say, cause. And that is why I think in one of the talks, in the class, I still remember on Wednesday, Mother said, evil does not exist. The only evil is ignorance. Le mal n'existe pas. Le seul mal, c'est l'ignorance. All starts from that. And what is ignorance? It is where we have turned our backs to the light and we accept to remain dark, unconscious. So all follows from there. All the consequences follow from there. That's why we hunt for the joy that earth has failed to keep. Too near to our gates, its unappeased unrest, for peace to live on the inert, solid globe. The true peace cannot exist here. What we call peace is an absence of energy, is a dullness, is a heaviness. Peace can be only when we live in that supreme light, consciousness, purity, equanimity. They are all different aspects of the supreme characteristics of the divine. But we are so undivine in our external existence that what we call peace is an absence of war. It becomes a failure to fight our own weaknesses, to go back to that state of inertia and ignorance. That is why it is that unappeased unrest. Unrest is a struggle which will go on forever. He talks of the writhing of the half-conscious force. Did you? It has joined its hunger to the hunger of earth. It has given the law of craving to our lives. That becomes the nature of the vital. To want what we don't have.
It is all life. It is all life.
It is life. But at a certain stage, that is why life, it becomes the field of all difficulties, all the things that really keep us away from that quiet connection with the divine, which was why the sages, the rishis says, stay away from, as far as possible, from the play of life. But then you are reduced to that state only of the supreme Brahman, but life in all its multiplicity, which is also a creation by the divine, that is neglected, that is pushed away. But since we are ignorant, what we call this multiplicity becomes a field of desire. Desire is the cause of suffering. So it has given the law of craving to our lives. It has made our spirit's need a fathomless gulf. That is the desire. An influence entered mortal night and day. A shadow overcast the time-born race. In the troubled stream where leaps a blind heart pulse and a nerve beat of feeling wakes incense, dividing matter's sleep from conscious mind, there strayed a call that knew not why it came. This call is the call of life between matter and mind. A shadow. It is not luminous. It is dim. But it is not the dull heaviness of inertia. That is broken. But why does life break that inertia? In the troubled stream where leaps a blind heart pulse. This is the life force in the body. Why does is it so important for the heart to beat? Without which there is no living being. What is it for? What are we existing for? Who are we? That is what we have forgotten. We are expressions of some kind of an energy which seems not to know why it is at work. And the nerve beat, because the nerves or that which puts us in, connects us with the world around us. So you can respond. With the help of the nerves, you respond. You respond to joy, to pain, to light, to shadow, to cold, to heat, to everything. Your nerves have to be alive. So this nerve beat has to be there. A feeling wakes in sense. But this is not really the true significance of feeling. It's simply a response of the nerves. But behind the origin of the nerves is the spirit, the soul. That we don't call feeling. It's just a feeling of pleasure, pain, joy, sorrow, attachment, desire. I have to have this. I feel happy today. I don't feel, I'm depressed today. All these things that simply take over our lives. It is this which rules us, because we are so filled with our self-love. It is the self-love, it is the ego. We live in this surface sheet, it's like a covering, and we live in that nature and say, I am happy if I get what I want. When I don't get what I want, I am sad, I feel disturbed. This is what my nerves tell me. I am, if I know what is life, I am a projection of the Supreme Ananda. It is the creative delight that has made this universe, of which I am a part. But I don't want to think of that. I want to think of me as a separate unit. I live in my little self. My reality is what I understand, my little self. You talk of the universe, you talk of consciousness, all that is very big. You talk of me, what I like, what I want, what I feel, that to me is important. Dividing matter, sleep from conscious mind. There's straight a call, that is the call of life. But life is a field of change. Movement can come only when there is some acceptance to change, to proceed from where you are to somewhere else. That knew not why it came. We always want to proceed with your life. Why do you want to proceed with your life? We don't know. We just want.
Dividing matter, sleep from conscious mind. Life is dividing.
Yes, life is in between, no? Because matter is inert, dull. Mind is the field, the first sign of light. Between that world of, even if it's a small light, it is light. And there is darkness below. Life is the in-between stage. So it is a power beyond earth scope. It's a power beyond matter. A power beyond earth scope has touched the earth. Or is it a power that is beyond mind? This is part of a divine plan. That is what life is. Life is a projection of force, a field of change. Without life, there can be no growth. There can be no manifestation. There can be no progress. So that is why without life, all things are expressions of life. You know that poem of Sri Aurobindo, Life Heavens? Even in rags I am a god. Fallen I am divine. High I triumph, when downtrod, long I live, when slain. So even in rags, life has fallen into a state of something very poor. Paucity he speaks of, poverty, poverty of consciousness. Yet it is a projection of the divine, because nothing can take place which is not taking place in the field of growth and change and progress, and that is life. Life is an expression of the Supreme Ananda, a daughter of delight. Only it has forgotten. So that's why the poem starts, "Let the radius of thy flight be eternity." Today the radius of our flight is time. Life moves in time. Is that radius of the flight is eternal? It's almost a contradiction in terms. Eternity has no radius. Eternity is infinite. And yet that is what life is. There is no terminus. There is no end. It is a play of a continuous manifestation of the divine creation. Therefore, it is a blessing in a way. The repose that might have been can be no more. The repose of inertia. Life breaks that repose. A formless yearning passions in man's heart. So in that, inertia is replaced by craving, by yearning, for what we don't know, but we know that I don't want to stay inert any longer. A cry is in his blood for happier things. Else would he roam on a free sunlit soul with a childlike pain forgetting mind of beasts, or live happy, unmoved, like flowers and trees. We have evolved from that state. The flower or the tree doesn't want to change into a bird. It doesn't want to be anything other than a tree. Man wants to be something more than what he is. And that is why there is this yearning. The might that came upon the earth to bless, this is the divine force. The might that came upon the earth to bless has stayed on earth to suffer and aspire. So this is the significance of life. This is why we suffer. Because if you don't suffer, you don't aspire to break out of your suffering. We have to go through the darkness, otherwise you never call for light. If all were pleasant, you would never ask for change. The gods don't ask to change. They don't know pain. The gods are always described as griefless. Griefless and deathless. But sometimes they are envious of men, because man knows grief. And therefore man aspires to be free from grief. The infant laugh that rang through time is hushed. The first original creative principle that you speaks of beasts and flowers and trees, slowly replaced by some yearning, so that quietness is hushed. Man's natural joy of life is overcast, and sorrow is his nurse of destiny. We have to suffer. Otherwise we will never grow out of our present state. This present state has to be painful. Only then can we ask for something else. You say, this can't go on, I have to change. So it is a blessing, but sometimes a blessing which you hardly call a blessing. You call it a test, you call it some kind of a enormous challenge. That is what only man can accept. He can accept to face the challenge, he can fight the battle, he can rise above what he is today. Which is why because he has said, to be more than man is what is a man. To exceed himself is man's manhood. If man is more than man, only then he is a man. Okay. You stop there.
You believe? Okay, what? Yes. What power is beyond earth's scope? That has,
the divine. Earth is this field of creation. And the power that is uncreated, because the origin has no beginning and no end. Can you say there is a scope? When what you our consciousness functions in limits. What is beyond our conception, we have to reach beyond ourselves to go back to the origin. But that infinite has come down into the finite. The infinite has come down into the world of man. Therefore, man can rise up to the infinite. Because he has come down into our world, so we can try to climb back to his world. That is, you might say, the holocaust of the divine, the supreme sacrifice. He chooses to come down into our world of darkness, which is, it comes later when Narada says, God must be born on earth and be as man, that man being human may grow even as God. We are not meant to stay the way we are. Yes, you wanted to say something?
I wanted two more lines.
The next line was very...
Read that.
The animal's thoughtless joy is left behind. Care and reflection burden his daily walk. He has risen to greatness and to discontent.
Exactly.
He is awake to the invisible.
So those are the things. Discontent is such a important thing. Because you are discontented, you want to, you reflect on what can I do to come out of this. So you have to come out, the sense of liberation. Liberation is not to go back to that formless original Brahman. Liberation is from that small consciousness to enter into the play of this universal force that is everywhere in all things, to feel that you don't have to go very far, but to just feel it in all things, even in the curve of a wave, as a beautiful phrase Mother says, the smile of the child, the sourire de l'enfant, raconte l'infini. You see the infinite in the smile of a child. That's enough. It is there. Only the child's smile, the infinite is there. When that child becomes an adult, care and reflection has come into his head. Thoughts, arguments, logic, preferences, decisions, this, that, should I do this, is this right, is this wrong? We have lost that ability to be one with that flow of the simple universal energy. We have to go back to that. You have to get everything in order to be able to lose everything.